You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca, or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.
How do we become a sustainable world? As the stakes for our survival continues to rise, so does our global consciousness. We are in the midst of a great spiritual awakening and are laying the foundations for a happy, peaceful, just, and sustainable world. With clear vision, determination, and a positive attitude, we are making sustainability happen. The transformation is already underway. You are listening to Sustainable Futures. Welcome to Sustainable Futures. This is an Olympic edition of the show. I'm going to give you a taste of three different elements of this Olympics experience here in Vancouver. I'm going to have some coverage from the downtown east side, where there's more of an active protest area in the Olympics.
And the ones that they are building for the people that are in the Olympics, they build certain housing. But you know what? When that's done and the Olympics are done with, it's not going to be cheap rent. It's going to be $800 or $900. People down here get a $500 check. Disability is $700. Minimum wage is $800. $8. Why don't they put it to $10? Why don't they put the $500 of social assistance up?
Then there's going to be coverage from celebrations on Granville Street and Robson. Interviews with different people involved in that aspect.
It's been pretty fantastic, actually. People are asking us questions regarding directions. We're taking pictures. We're, you know, showing people around where to go, what to see. And then we're just also just laughing and having a good time ourselves. So it's a combination, and it's a mutually beneficial experience, I think, for both the people that are visiting and for the people that are volunteering.
As well, as a longtime Olympic coverage reporter, Andy Shaw, we'll have an interview from him. So he's going to be representing the media point of view.
Well, there's a common misconception about the Olympics, and that is that the Olympics are the highest level of competition. They are not. The highest level of competition in most sports are to be found in the World Cup competitions and the World Championship.
So this week on Sustainable Futures, I hope to bring you a nice balanced perspective on what the Olympics has been so far here in Vancouver. I'm Ryan Fletcher, and I'm wishing you sustainable future. Hi, welcome to Sustainable Futures, and let's begin, shall we? The first couple of segments are going to come from Tent City. Tent City is a organized habitation in a vacant parking lot in the downtown east side, where all the homeless people are gathered to claim their rights to a place to live. And the very first interview is bit from left field in a way. There were some Americans that were trying to get access into Tent City, and found that very interesting in itself, that people from America, you're curious, what are people from America going to say about this kind of event? But what else was interesting that you might not catch from the interview, because I'm right there with them, is that when they were trying to get access into Tent City, they were asked if they were a religious group, and they said no. And what you'll see in the interview is that this seems to be a false statement.
Hi, this is Ryan with CJSF 90.1 FM. I just arrived at Tent City, and I found some interesting people from the States here to look at the homeless issue. Tell me, what brought you to Vancouver?
There's a project called the Olympic Bible Project that goes to all the Olympic events, and we go into the location there, and we make available some the scriptures Gospels of John, books of Romans, and we usually have things like these Olympic pins or commemorative pins, and it allows us to share the truth of God's Word. It talks about the gold. Each one of the colors have a significance, and we're able to share the love of Jesus with people. And it's interesting. There's some areas, we're all over the town right now, you get a different level of acceptance. I personally have a ministry in where I'm from in California, ministering to a group of homeless folks. And, the face of homelessness is changing. It's no longer the Skid Row guy over the fire barrel with a bottle of Thunderbird. There's highly educated, often motivated people. It's just with our economic challenges, I think we're seeing the face of homelessness change today. And so we're just out here sharing the love of Jesus, man. Those who are receptive to maybe the written word or just a sharing verbally, and maybe it's not the written or verbal, but maybe it's just an expression of love.
Mm-hmm. Is this open to people of all faith?
That's kind of like a question that's, what does it mean to all faith? It's open to anybody who is open to the Bible. Jesus did not, if you go back and you look at the historical account, there was not denominations. Denomination is a man-made thing. Now, there are those that continue to practice the biblical principles that Jesus taught. And the most effective way to identify that is you grab your Bible and you look at Jesus taught. And if that's what the church is teaching and holding to, then there's a good chance that they are biblically based. But unfortunately, today there's a lot of folks who have intermingled man's truth with the Bible truth. Relative truth and absolute truth don't work. They absolutely don't mix. And so what we're open to is the Bible being true. What I share with people is, are you open to the Bible being absolutely true and the truth of man being absolutely false? Because if not, then there's no reason to even dialogue, because you already have a preconceived idea. But see, I try to keep myself open to the truth of God's Word and allow the Word of God to dictate my not only my beliefs but my practice.
Okay. And your name is Brian, right?
Yes.
And what's your impression being of Vancouver here? Is this your first time here?
This is my first time out of the States. What I've seen so far is a beautiful city. It looks like it's, what I've been able to see of it so far is has a beautiful mixture of contemporary with a rich district that we look down here that has some character in its age, a variety of peoples. I have yet to be greeted by anybody that I would be offended by. I know there's a lot of people in the city right now that are all over the world. Thus far, the people I've met have been a true blessing.
Okay. And how does this neighborhood, the downtown east side of Vancouver, compare to what you might see in American cities?
I would say that, in most urban districts, that's the amazing thing that... if you go into any culture, the impact of humanity, it transcends those cultural barriers, because whether it's a level of financial affluence or those who are facing more economically challenging situations, the common denominator is the human experience. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line, that's what Jesus spoke about, was the human experience, that we all experience a level of brokenness at some level. Those who are more affluential, who have more resources, simply cover up their brokenness more effectively. What I like to tell folks in California is, when you go to these economically challenged areas in the urban areas, the brokenness is on the front porch with a 12-pack of beer, and the chairs around the front tree. You go to the more affluential areas, the 12-pack's in the recycling bin, and the chairs are around the barbecue.
Right.
And so it's just a matter of perspective. The level of brokenness is something that transcends our human existence, is what ties us together. And Jesus said, because we're broken, that Jesus said, I came not to call the whole need not a physician, but those that are broken need the physician. And so it's just a matter of whether or not we recognize our brokenness.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what's the name of the group? I don't know if I caught that.
It's called the Olympic Bible Project, and it's a ministry out of, where's Brother David from?
Hillcrest Baptist Church in Georgia.
Okay. And have you been to past Olympics?
I have not.
The Olympic Bible Project started in Los Angeles, I believe, and has been a part of every Olympics since.
Okay.
The group we're with, actually, we have some of the group that are actually came, the last one in China, they were there. So they've been going strong ever since the games in L.A. and they go to both winter and the summer games.
Now, why do you specifically pick Olympics? What's the significance of the Olympics?
Well, in Matthew 28, the Bible tells us Jesus commanded to his faithful followers, his New Testament church, he says to go to all nations. And so, you know, it's kind of a smorgasbord. Instead of going to all nations, it's an opportunity to go to a place where all nations are coming to one location. Right. And so we also have a variety of the scriptures and a number of different languages that we make available as well.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
And again, when they were trying to gain access into Tent City, they said they had no religious messaging to pass on. This next interview is from the inside of Tent City. I did manage to get in. I don't know if they ever did manage to get in, that group. But I did. And I had a short interview with Stella, who was, although not officially, she was sort of acting as the director on the inside. And I found her to be a very wonderful lady throughout the week. I spent a fair bit of time in Tent City throughout the week, and I really got to appreciate Stella. However, this is when I was just meeting her, and you'll get to hear what she had to say.
Hi, this is Ryan Fletcher of CJSF, reporting from Tent Village on Hastings here, and I'm here with Stella, and well, thank you for giving us your time, Stella.
Yeah, my name is Stella August. I'm a Hauser band member from the west coast of Vancouver Island, but I've been a long-time resident for the downtown east side, and I speak for our people on the downtown east side. The reason for this Tent City is we're trying to get across to the government that our people should not be homeless. Not be homeless in our beautiful country. You know, with the Olympics that is here now has increased the homelessness. And I'm hoping that for what we're doing is that they will recognize us on the downtown east side of the poor side of town, you know, because it's urgent to get homes for these homelessness, because it's young and old, pensioners, elders, you know, and mental people and handicapped people in scooters and wheelchairs that are homeless. That's so wrong. It should never happen, you know. And we're going to stay out and speak out until we're heard.
And were you involved with the organization of this? How was this organized?
I'm just a volunteer. I just fall in place whatever action comes on, because it's the downtown east side I stand up for.
Okay. And do the people stay here all day long?
Stay all day, all night. And we're going to stay as long as we can stay, you know, and support our people for the downtown east side, the poor side of town.
Has there been any space? Has there been enough space for everybody here?
Oh, there hasn't been any problem at all. There's lots of room here, and everybody's welcome. And this is a peaceful rally, you know, from our hearts. We're full of spirit and laughter and warm and comfort for the homeless.
Okay, thank you very much. And is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
For the Olympics and the rich people to party hardy here, and the police are watching us, just watching us for what, you know? I mean, what is wrong with the poor people? Why can't they party hardy and camp out and have a good time too? You know, the rich people and the Olympics can pack up and leave our country, you know, because they expanded the poverty big time for our country here. And people are going to be hurting big time after the Olympics are gone, because I feel for the taxpayers that have to pay the big debt that they're leaving behind.
Okay, thank you very much. So it's Ryan from CJSF, and I'm just going to take a moment to describe what's here. So we're just on Hastings Street, the corner of Hastings and Abbott, and there's about a dozen, 20, well, I'd say 20 to 30 tents, a fire put inside an empty cauldron. A lot of people sitting around the fire. That's where I met Stella. We have some food. that's being put out by Food Not Bombs. And a lot of people here.
Okay, now the next series of interviews are going to give you a different perspective on the Olympic. The first interview is with Olympic volunteers, and it takes place on Georgia Street. And also I'll have two interviews from the I Heart Van Aert Festival. I came there on their film day, and I'll be interviewing the MC of events, Ryan Catherwood, and as well as one of the filmmakers from that event, and that took place in Yaletown. So here's an interview with some Olympic volunteers.
So this is Ryan Fletcher from CJSF 90.1 FM, and I'm talking with people that have all the same green jacket. I'm wondering, is that a coincidence?
Yes, that is. We're actually part of the Ismaili community, and we live in over 25 countries in the world. And we pride ourselves on volunteerism, and that's why we're here, to sort of integrate as part of the whole Olympic experience. And we're here to welcome the world to Vancouver, so with our big smiles. Yeah, so welcome.
Well, you're doing a good job so far. I'm going to be watching you for your smiles now. So is there a reason you get a, do you get a specific green jacket because you're being from?
The Ismaili community has actually contributed over 500 volunteers to VanOck, and so we've partnered up, and in recognition of that, we've gotten our green jackets to sort of represent our community. Mm-hmm.
Does that mean you have to be extra environmentally friendly too?
Yes, we think so.
And how's the experience being volunteering? What kinds of things do you end up doing?
It's been pretty fantastic, actually. People are asking us questions regarding directions. We're taking pictures. We're, you know, showing people around where to go, what to see. And then we're just also just laughing and having a good time ourselves. So combination, and it's a mutually beneficial experience, I think, for both the people that are visiting and for the people that are volunteering.
Yeah. I've been asking people questions about this this thing right here.
Yes.
That's my question for you. What do you think it is? What do you think this gray something on, just off the Granville SkyTrain is?
It's actually an interpretation of a polar bear. That's what we were told yesterday.
Okay, so it's got some kind of a polar bear-ness to it. Okay. Any other thoughts on what that might be over here? Sometimes people act as if my microphone is a gun. Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
This is Ryan Fletcher from CJSF Radio at the I Heart Van Aert film screenings. And I have one of the local filmmakers here. Tell me, what's your name?
Hi, my name is Jeff Chiba Stearns.
And what film are you screening today?
I made a film called Yellow Sticky Notes. It's a short animated film that was animated entirely on Post-it notes.
The whole film's on Post-it notes.
Yeah, I took about 2,300 Post-it notes, and generally it's a self-reflection of the last 9 years of my life, looking back at how Post-it note to-do lists like overruled the things I was doing, and I was so busy doing my own stuff I was neglecting the world around me. So I took my revenge by animating self-reflections back onto Post-it notes.
That sounds great. When's that screening?
I believe that's in between 5 and 6 o'clock tonight.
Okay. How did you hear about this competition? Is it a competition?
Well, not a competition, but I think it's just a celebration of screenings and a celebration of short films from local filmmakers, so Vancouverites and Whistlerites, and I think Whistlerites is the right word. But yeah, it's basically a celebration of local filmmakers and just coming together to kind of show work together. And it's really actually, I guess the program is quite long. It's starting at 4 and goes till 10 at night. So I guess intermittently they've separated them up into an hour-long screenings. Mm-hmm. And each of the screenings... Yeah, it's kind of lumped into sort of a certain category, like family-friendly films or multicultural films. So mine's in more of the multicultural section, because a lot of the themes I explore are multiracial identity, because I'm half Japanese. So yeah.
Okay. And do you have any other films that you've done, or is this one of your first projects?
No, this is about the fourth short I've made. I just finished up a feature-length documentary called One Big Hapa Family. And that explores sort of the high intermarriage rate amongst the Japanese Canadian community, which is almost at 100%. And it sort of takes a journey with my family and looks at why is there such a high intermarriage rate. So, yeah, this is the fourth film. So the one should be coming out in probably a couple months. It should be wrapped up, the feature film.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Bone Daddy, we've got all the kids right in front row. They're going to be screaming the whole time.
You're listening to the iHeart Van Art Film. About to interview the MC of the event, Ryan Catherwood, who you just heard. So this takes place between Helmekin and Davey.
Davey and Drake.
Davey and Drake. What is the purpose of this event?
This is a short film screening in the streets of Vancouver during the Olympics. We got this site and this opportunity to screen about 40 short films. And we are just basically supporting the local filmmakers to give exposure to the local filmmakers of Vancouver. All of these films have been shot and edited in Vancouver, and just as basically a testament to the talent that is here in the film industry. We don't get a lot of opportunities to screen our films, so we are just using this opportunity to do so.
But how many films are involved?
45 altogether. So it's just a one-time, one-day event. It's going on until 10 o'clock, so we've got, right now we've got Bone Daddy versus the superheroes, and it's kind of a fan film, as they would call it, Batman and Superman making appearances as children.
Yes.
We got our little screen up here, and you're out of here, Jeremy?
Yeah, that's cool. Thanks, everyone.
Don't worry.
Well, I'm going to come back. So.
Okay, please do. Yeah, we're having the after party, too, just down the street.
Oh, right.
At 10 o'clock.
I Heart Van Art. Is this a one-day thing as well, or is that something bigger?
The plan for I Heart Van Art is to go on and grow and to help support the arts industry here in Vancouver, basically facing the funding cuts from the government that are coming down the line. That was their initiative to get this going. So they've got 15 days of singing, dancing, multicultural, interactive, DJs, everything you think of going on for the 15 days. So. Yeah.
I know you're very busy, Ryan. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ryan. And we'll play some cribs sometime.
Okay. Bye.
You're listening to Sustainable Futures on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's a third story from the Olympics, and this has been very important to it as well. And it's from someone I met inside the W2 Media Center. The Media Center, which has allowed for alternative medias, independent journalists, and folks of that kind to do a much more efficient coverage of the Olympics and tell more than just a story of the sporting and nationalism, but the full story of what the Olympic experience is. And this is been enabled very much by this W2 Center, where all of these kinds of journalists were able to work together and also expand the coverage so that more and more people are able to reach it. And the interview itself is inspired by my meeting this fellow, and he had some interesting things to say, as well as the fact that he's been to many Olympics before, so he has a great point of comparison, point of view, as well as being someone who tells full stories rather than just the nationalist sporting side of things. So here we have an interview with Andy Shaw.
So I'm here with Andy Shaw. We just finished attending one of the conferences here at the Fresh Media. I'm really interested in some things you had to say. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you, Ryan. It's a pleasure to be here, and a pleasure to be back on a university radio station. And we had one at my school, Queen's University, which I think was one of the first in the country.
Excellent. So you have a lot of experience with Olympics. This is your sixth Olympics. And I guess to begin, you were saying something about Vancouver's being very significant for its cultural content. What have you noticed about this Olympics?
I've never seen so many people in the streets. My take on the Olympics is that it's, as we talked about earlier, it's not the highest level of competition, as a lot of people think, but it's the best festival of sports. There's nothing like it. Mm. And it's the best thing for animating a city and a host city's population, and no city that I've been to, and a lot of other guys that I talk to, my colleagues in the journalism world, they've been to more Olympics than me. Nobody has seen the animation, the number of people on the streets, the way Vancouverites have turned out. It's remarkable.
by animation, do you mean the excitement, the level of excitement?
Yeah, it's just people coming out. I mean, I was walking down Robson the other night, and people spontaneously broke out in all Oh Canada. I mean, like, yeah. It was a chant. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, apparently this is happening a lot.
And incidentally, the IOC is very pleased about that. Because that's what the IOC do a lot of things wrong, but that thing got right, and they see it as the best ever. I know that the Raga, the head of IOC, feels this is the best ever in terms of that kind of social involvement.
Do you have any theories as to why that is? Why it's just Vancouver that's being so celebratory?
You know, I think it has there are a number of reasons. One is, you've never really had a major games. You've never had a major event like this. Nothing like this that's worldwide. I come from Toronto, we're the same. We're going to get the Pan American Games, nothing on this year. But we lack ice, and when a city gets it for the first time, there is a feeling. I was in Oslo, Norway. It's the only other place that I can think of. I was there, not for the Winter Olympics, but for World Championships in cross country skiing and Nordics. And there was a similar spirit there. When you get that big event for the first time, people get it, and they want to be part of it. Mm-hmm. They get out in the streets and they party.
What do you think?
A sociologist would give a better answer. I just deserve it.
I was going to ask you actually a bit of a sociologist question to kind of challenge you. What do you think it is that's making the Canadian population want to come out here and sing Oh Canada in the streets?
Well, I think we have a latent patriotism that somehow this is captured. You know? I covered it, as I was mentioning, I've covered Canada's international performances around the world. And I've been at events where, for instance, Susan Matras won the World Crap Shooting Championship. I was the only other Canadian there. And the sense of pride as the sun set over the hills of southern France that I felt without didn't know it was in me.
Uh-huh.
Once I saw that, it pulled something out that I never knew I had in me. And I think that's what's happening in a lot of Vancouverites as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the gold medals have a lot to do with it. To know that your people can win.
Yeah.
Is something extraordinary.
And you cover sports a lot. From the sports perspective, in the Winter Olympics, I believe Canada is in fourth for the medals, or fourth or fifth? Is that a typical ranking for the winter?
It's not typical in the sense that we were fourth or so. I believe we were fourth in Torino, but we were hoping for much more here. We had a whole program called Own the Podium program, and so far it's been kind of a disappointment. We are not where we should be or wanted to be in terms of medal count. I've got some theories about why that is, but perhaps that's a subject for another question.
Okay. And then now you're talking about the World Championships versus the Olympics, and that's all news to me. I never knew that this was the case, but please tell us your feelings on that.
Well, I think there's a common misconception about the Olympics, and that is that the Olympics are the highest level of competition. They are not. The highest level of competitions in most sports are to be found in the World Cup competitions and the World Championships. You've got more competitors with greater skills at those events than you do at an Olympics. The Olympics are for every country.
Mm-hmm.
So the founder of the modern Olympics, Pierre de Coubertin, said winning is not the important thing, that taking part is. They were intended as a kind of social movement, speaking of social media, so that more people could get involved. So we do have skiers from Ghana. We do have cross-country racers from Costa Rica who haven't seen snow before. It's not the populace. So the facilities at an Olympics, because it's not the highest level of competition, have to be less challenging. As I say, they have to be dumbed down. And Vancouver made a mistake in doing the opposite. They made their track, their sliding track. Not only did they not dumb it down, they made it the most dangerous in the world. And the question still remains, how did that happen at all?
Okay.
It was that dangerous track. Remember that track was running, the first runs of the Rouge, was running 15 kilometers an hour faster than the next fastest track in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that had a lot to do with that tragic, with the death of the Georgian Rouge.
It's a very interesting story, too. How do you feel something like this has an effect on the perception of the games, especially when it happens just before the opening?
It certainly marred it, and it set up. You know, what happens before an Olympics is you've got all these journalists here, like me, like I used to be, coming in 4 or 5 days before the event. I came during the games this time, and you got nothing to write about because there's no events. There's nothing that's happened. So you start writing about things that tend to be negative. What's wrong? It's just a natural kind of journalistic instinct to say, well, if we can't write about the good, we'll go find the bad.
Yeah.
The fact that it, you know, was on the first day of competition, but it was bad. And there was really nothing else to write about. So it got absolutely played worldwide. And then there was the mishap with the opening ceremonies, the first leg, the Pullman Nut coming up. And those things just kind of piled up on each other, and there was really not still much else to write about. Mm-hmm. So you start writing about these things on this. Where Vancouver failed was to do a good pre-event publicity to kind of take the edge away from it so that people had a greater expectation, better expectation of what to expect when they came to Vancouver, including the weather, which also was part of the negative story. It's now turned out to be part of the positive story.
Regards
to sunshine. But you've got to do a better seeding of media expectations before the event, and Vancouver did this poorly.
Now, in the past, if you'd exposed, we're standing before the W2 Media Center, just on the street of Hastings, and what's your perception of this media center and this alternative media facility here?
Again, remarkable. I've never seen anything like this in my life. I think it was significant, more than my opinion, is that the number of the speakers who have been involved in this kind of promotion, or if you will, or stimulation of social media around the Olympics had never seen anything like it either.
Mm-hmm.
So this is unprecedented, and I think, and I hope, it's a sign of the times and where it's headed.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to more Olympics with this kind of interest.
Have you seen this level of alternative coverage?
No.
No?
No.
Yeah.
No, this is unprecedented. You know, as our speaker said, it really got going to a serious extent in Beijing, but this is unprecedented. But it's a reflection of the times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the way media is going. Mm-hmm. And so why shouldn't it be? And I thought it was interesting that a number of the speakers also talked about how the IOC is kind of, the International Olympic Committee has kind of recognized that, and they're dabbling with it, but I don't think they got a real feel for it yet, judging of what they said.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to tell our audience, or any other observations?
I feel ambivalent about Vancouver because of the Vancouver Olympics. I don't feel ambivalent about Vancouver, it's a great place. But, you know, the saddest words ever written are what might have been.
Mm-hmm.
If we'd had more professional management of the games, if there had been more active involvement of the federal government and other officials who had experience and knew what to do, I think we could have had a much better game.
Mm-hmm.
One with more of a legacy. And what disappoints me the greatest is because that didn't happen. What's going to happen after the Vancouver Olympics is that the athletes who competed and who got such great media attention will almost instantly afterwards be ignored. There's no legacy of following how these athletes are going to do it because there's no attempt to change the way media follows them.
And
we could have done that with the Vancouver Olympics.
Okay.
So I count that as a great decision.
Yeah. And I have one more thing to... I don't know if you're aware of this part of things, but I'm just going to test you.
Sure, right.
There's been a real lack of transparency coming into the Olympics about how things are going to be, where the events are, why the security's here, what they're going to do, what's all going to happen. Have you observed that in past Olympics? Has it been really not been very transparent coming in, or have you been part of that pre-Olympics conversation?
Yes, I have noticed it elsewhere. It goes to the territory.
Yeah.
That's why you have to work against it.
Yeah.
And that's why you have to have more than just local people on your organizing committee. You have to have people who know this and how to work against it to make it more transparent. Because the natural reaction is to close. You know, Mr. Furlong probably did some very good things. He seems like a very nice man. It was unavailable to the media. I wrote him a letter 6 years ago making some suggestions about how to open things up. Despite many requests for a reply, since he never replied.
Uh huh. Yeah. So what happens? Is it just the level of busyness, or is it the priority? I mean, it's got to be part priority, too.
It's part priorities because you've got to stage the games first, and you've got to get it down, and you've got to do it right. It's part lack of involving people who have true experience. There are a number of people I could name, which wouldn't mean much to your audience, but would have solved that problem of pre-event publicity, effective pre-event publicity, would have solved the media problem that you had at the beginning of the games. Not, if not solved, but certainly ameliorated. So lack of seeking professional help where it was needed and relying on hometown people who were perfectly competent in their own spheres but didn't have the international experience.
Okay, thank you very much for your time.
All right, it was a pleasure.
And for the rest of the show today, I'm going to go back to what I think is actually the biggest story, at least of my Olympics, is Tent City. They managed to really hold their ground, and they're still there as I speak. And this is an interview from a press conference later in the week. This is a press conference from Monday. And I'm going to highlight the speaker, Elaine, from that press conference. I was particularly interested in the way that she presented the homelessness issue. On a personal level, she made it really, really accessible to me to really understand what it's like to be in that situation. Rather than taking the more political, organizational view of speaking, she really talks about the daily life of being homeless and why the way things are set up are really not working. So here's Elaine from the Tent City press conference on Monday.
My name is Elaine DeRocher. And that's E-L-A-I-N-E-D-U-R-O-C-H-E-R. And I am one of the members of the group that got this Tent City started. We're the Power to Women from the downtown east side. And I needed to elaborate on what David just said about the conditions down here and how the government is trying to sweep the poverty under the rugs here in Vancouver. It's all good that the Olympics is happening. I'm not against the people that are in the Olympics that are trying hard for Canada. I am against the 6 billion, maybe 7 billion counting amount of dollars that are being spent on the Olympics, and none of it is given to the homeless people down here. As you know, the poverty is growing in Vancouver, and it's in 1989 I went to Richmond and there was a press conference with the people from City Hall, and I heard them say there will be no more poverty in Vancouver in 1999, in children 0 to 6, well, as you know, it's gotten worse. It's increased. And not only is it 0 to 6, it's the elderly, it's the middle class with children that come down here because they can't afford anything else. And if you look behind us, we can't live in these buildings with mold and mildew, bed bugs, cockroaches, mice that run on people's faces at night as you sleep. Those are very poor conditions. People get pneumonia, lung diseases. My one friend had cockroaches living under his nail. His toe had to be amputated. You know, we are somebody's people down here. We're somebody's family. We need help to, as you know, the Olympics is bringing a big tax burden on all of you that I'm looking at here are going to be paying for the tax burden for the next, 30, 50 years? Expo 86, there's still remnants of that. So therefore, I say, if you help the poor people down here, the people living in poverty, give us homes, give us a means of cleaning up our act. You can't go to an interview if you have rotten teeth, if you have no proper attire. How are you going to look for an interview? They're not going to talk to us. So we need monies to help ourselves. So we can help the government and all you taxpayers alleviate the tax burden that's coming upon the city because of the Olympics 2010.
What's going to happen? I mean, a week from now, the Olympics is going to leave town. What's going to happen if the private property owner here says you got to go?
Well, so Stella, Auntie will talk on that. Somebody else will. Somebody else will.
Here we go.
Well, as you know, we want to stay here until somebody helps the homeless get some kind of housing. But if somebody asks us to leave, this is a peaceful protest. I'm not here to swear at the camera. I'm not here to smash windows. I'm not here to smash cars. I'm not here to condemn anybody. Because as you know, poverty doesn't know any age, any gender, or any color. And poverty and homelessness is what we're fighting for. So therefore, when they ask us to leave here, and if it's before our demands are met, we will leave peacefully. But we're here to make a statement to the government. Please, if you can spend over $7 billion on the Olympics, put a little bit of billions of dollars into the homeless, the poverty-stricken, and the middle class, because we are the future of this city. Our children that are brought down here because of the cheap rent, our children get caught up in this skid row, and then the cycle just continues. It's just a vicious cycle. We want housing, homes, justice. Not that I know of at this point, but I'm sure somebody here in our Olympic tent village has spoken to Vanok. I'm sure of it. But we have obeyed by all the rules, so there's nothing for them to get upset over.
Are you staying down here yourself?
I was homeless in my city 2 years ago here. I got a place to live, but I don't forget where I come from. It made me humble to be homeless. Took my self-esteem, my self-worth, my identity as a Canadian citizen, that people could just throw you to the curb like old garbage in our own city. So,
thank you.
Thank you. Elaine DeRocher.
How many tents do you have?
About 150 to 200 and counting.
And briefly, the general idea. So what is your problem with the Olympics?
The problem, as I keep telling people, is not the people that are participating in the Olympics. It's the government that put the Olympics together and forgot to include the poor people, like a little bit of money to help us help ourselves. You can't brush poverty under the rug. You can't hide it. Sure, you go and spend lots of money and it's all great on the Olympics, but what about the future of our city? What about the people down here that prefer to sleep on the streets because these rooms are full of bedbugs, cockroaches, mice that run on your face at night, that pee and poo in your jacket that you got to wear the next day, but you have nothing to change and do because you have nothing better?
What about the SROs the government has already renovated?
Renovated. I don't know where. And the ones that they are building for the people that are in the Olympics, they build certain housing, but you know what? When that's done and the Olympics are done with, it's not going to be cheap rent. It's going to be $800 or $900. People down here get a $500 check. Disability is $700. Minimum wage is $800. $8. Why don't they put it to $10? Why don't they put the $500 of social assistance up? I mean, people can't afford shoes. They can't afford to change their clothes. They can't afford to brush their teeth. Their teeth are falling out, but they want us to go and present ourselves when it's time to do an interview for a job. How are people going to look at you and hold? For us to present ourselves to society, we need to look a certain way. We need a certain attire. We need toothbrushes, toothpaste. We need money to do that. Not running around wondering where is the next free place to take a shower. Where do I get my free toothbrush, toothpaste? What soup lineup do I hit? Where do I make a sandwich? Where do I get a coffee? Everything down here is a lineup, 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 lineup. Just like the Olympics, it's all a lineup. But down here, it's for food. It's for our survival skills, to eat, to sleep. That's why we have this Olympic tent village, to bring awareness to the poverty down here, and to the homelessness.
Do you think that if the government isn't addressing the issues, the occupation here will continue and perhaps expand in the future?
There won't be only this one tent, Olympic tent village, I'll tell you. Once the Olympic goes, and I know we set this up together, Power to Women was just a small group from the Downtown Eastside Women's Center, put this together. If we can do this, we can bring awareness again. I'm not afraid to speak up because I am a humble person who was homeless here in my own city, in my own country. I'm ashamed to be Canadian sometimes, ashamed. As you know, we are one of the richest countries in the world. So Canada has their own dirty little secrets in their closets. Well, I've opened their closet doors by putting this tent city, this Olympic tent village together to bring awareness of what's going on, the injustices, how it's against the law to be poor in this country. How is that? Criminalized for being poor. They want to put us all in shelters till the Olympics finished, and then what? and then all this is going to be back on the street again.
Are you from some organizations?
I am. That is my sign right there, Power to Women. Okay. We are part of a group from the Downtown Eastside Women's Center. We started this Olympic Tent Village to bring awareness to the poverty and the homelessness. I keep repeating myself. My throat's getting sore. Okay.
But you are not homeless right now, no?
No, I was homeless at one time. Yes, I was in my own city only two years ago. So that I can't forget that. So that's why I fight for the injustices of the other people down here that don't have a voice, don't have a means to speak up for themselves. Well, I am their voice. I am their spirit. I am my heart. I live on a disability. And, you know, it's even hard to live on a disability check. When I bring my grandchildren, I got to make sure I have food in my cupboards. I have to make sure that my laundry is clean. I mean, the money just doesn't stretch anywhere, as you know. I can't take my granddaughter even to McDonald's for an ice cream. I got to go to buy a bucket of ice cream, put it in the fridge, and make it last. I mean, down here, it's like you're always running to survive, run for the soup lineup. Thank God I don't have to stand in one, but a lot of people do because there's no cooking facilities in the rooms. There's no bathrooms in the rooms. I mean, people got to go down the hall and there's 50 other people using the toilet.
What about the Shelters Act?
What about the shelters? They're only good for the nighttime. The shelter's only good for to sleep, and then 6 o'clock in the morning, where do you go? Even people in the city, some of them don't know what 6 o'clock in the morning is. Well, poverty does. And you have to be in before 11 at night. So how many hours of sleep is that? And then the next day you got to run again to go and eat, shower, brush your teeth. You know, not everybody wants us here. They think we're dirty, but we're not. We're somebody's people. I'm somebody's mom. I'm somebody's grandma. I'm somebody's sister. I'm somebody's auntie. Same with down here. That's why Gordon Campbell, all those politicians that are in City Hall that I voted for, this and that McGregor, they need to know that this is a reality. This is somebody's people down here. And maybe they got to come and take a closer look. This might be some of their people down here that are in poverty.
Do you know how many people are sleeping here at night?
I've calculated, or some people, over 150 tents. Okay. Peace out. Peace out. This is a peaceful protest. I want you to know it's all done with peace and love.
Okay. What about the people who think that social housing is a kind of prison?
Oh, social housing. A lot of people don't stay in it because they think it's a prison. Just like this gentleman says, a prison means that they keep an eye on you. If you want to bring someone in, you got to pay someone to and sign a paper, give your ID, whatever. And to me, that's like signing into a prison. They want to take your thumbprint and your ID. They want you to pay before somebody can. So social housing should not be a prison. Social housing should be a place that people can come and go as they want without being monitored, without being looked down upon. Oh, you got is he from the streets because he's got a cart? That's all they have is in that cart. That's their life in that cart. Why should somebody say something you can't come in because you have a cart? See, that's what social housing is. Some of it is a prison. So this is what this gentleman is trying to say. That's why we're sticking this all together. We need proper respect, just like any other human being.
Proper respect. Collective spaces, and not only isolated cells, as more the social housing are.
Say that again, please.
I just said more collective spaces, and
more
not like
people. Spaces?
More collective spaces,
mm-hmm.
Where the people are not isolated, as they are mostly in the social housing right now.
Oh yeah, and also down here, I just got to elaborate when he's saying that. Down here, you know, when you're poor, everybody looks down their nose. There's no bathrooms here. They wonder why you get ticketed for urinating on the street. You know why? Because everybody closes their door down here. Unless you got money to purchase something in their stores, unless you got money to go in their restaurants and sit down and eat, you're not allowed to go in their washrooms and go pee. You're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to do that. So it's kind of like you are black-walled. There's a black thing over you for living in poverty. And that shadow follows you no matter where you go, even if you get onto disability or welfare.
And the jailers in many ways.
That cloud carries you because you are poor. So therefore,
therefore, because you're poor and you give them a postal code that you live in the downtown east side, people look down their nose at you. But you know what? Not everybody down here is an alcoholic or a drugaholic or an abuser, or because I am not. And just because I have cleaned up my act and become part of the solution down here instead of the problem, that makes my spirit and my heart want to fight for the injustices of the other people down here, because I can't forget where I came from.
And also, I can't forget. We live on a state of oppression. Like, it's good to
a
ask.
A state of oppression, but he's right. Oppressed. Isn't that enough now with the jails, the hospitals, the mental institutions, just taking people, drugging them up, throwing them on the street, Riverview? You know, as soon as you speak up for yourself and the police catch you, your arms are twisted backwards, dislocated, thrown in jail, stripped of your dignity and everything else, and then they proceed to cavity check you. I don't know what they're trying to find, but they take your dignity. How you can walk around the city after holding your head high when they've taken everything that you stand for, and then on top of that, you're homeless. We need justice down here. We're somebody's people. I'm going to keep saying it. This is somebody's brother, someone's dad, someone's uncle. I know I belong to someone. All these other people belong to somebody. Why should we be treated any less?
Thank you very much, Elaine. I really appreciate you coming out here.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day. All my relations.
So this is Ryan Fletcher from CJSF at Tent City. Just talking with Elaine.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, because we live also in a colonial state and a capitalist state. And I think personally that they don't answer to social housing. They increase the homelessness in Vancouver more than they create social housing, because they have no interest, because this state is owned by the corporation and the corporation work for the rich people.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We don't have to wait after these people. We have to take back spaces.
And what's your name?
Oh, my name is Chris.
Thank you. Okay, so, Tent City. But, if you want to see Tent City, hopefully it'll still be there and for you to see. It's corner of Abbott and Hastings. If you're facing south, it'd be on the left-hand side. It's very easy to see. Lots of tents. And it's very tense. Actually, I was here earlier, and there was also a lot of music, a lot of solidarity among the people in the tents, and it's overall, it's a very good thing, in my opinion. It's something that's very welcome to be debated. One of the more notable things I've seen here is there's an unfortunate sign that one of the residents in an adjacent building has put up. Build resumes, not tents. And if you caught that, those words from Elaine, you can see how offensive something like that can be. But overall, I think there's been pretty good support here for the Tent City people. That concludes another Olympic edition of Sustainable Futures. This is episode number 50. If you would like a copy of this episode, it will be made available on the website radioforall.net. That's radioforall.net. All past episodes are put on there eventually. Not saying it will be there right away, but you can get past episodes there. Just go into the search bar and search Sustainable Futures, and you can get many of our past episodes. Thank you for listening. It's been a pleasure to go around and try and give you a balanced perspective of what this is all about here in Vancouver, and I'm wishing you a sustainable future.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca, or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.